Welcome, welcome to the PCP podcast.
Physical culture.
Physical culture.
Yeah. Because we're physical creatures in a physical world.
This is Abram Hodgins,
and this is Gregory Roberts.
Yes.
Yes.
And we are pumped. And we're pumped because we're on PCP. And we just like to have conversations about all kind of, like, wide-ranging topics, including human optimization.
The meaning of life. I think we're both sparked by a lot of curiosities, and
let's give some background.
Introspection. Right. Well, like, I was going to start with how we met.
Okay.
Because I feel like that actually, like, says a lot about our friendship event, I think.
Okay.
Right? I was teaching my Smooth Moves bodyweight movement mobility class at Original Muscle Beach of Santa Monica, and sometimes I do that. I get kind of, like, pretty animated and very, like, I'd like to inject humor into it. And Gregory shows up, and I forget exactly how the first, like,
my normal moments went, but basically my normal thing at the beach is I just go and find the prettiest girl and ask her if she wants to fly and do some acrobatics.
Yeah, I had longer hair than what he actually.
But that day, specifically, I was getting tired of that
routine,
and I was like, you know what? I just want to have a conversation with a human. And at the moment I stepped on the green, there was a...
Yeah, that sounds bad, though, because you're like, come on, like, women aren't humans.
You know? No, I mean, it could have been a girl or a guy.
Yeah,
I just want... In other words, I wasn't going to be physical.
Right.
I just wanted to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And it turns out, at least in my recollection of it, that you and I talked for, like, the next 2 hours about God and...
Yeah, it wasn't quite 2 hours. I just finished my class at Fake, and... I think one of the things that, like, initially, like, connected us was, like, I think, do you remember what, like, I said something, a quote from the Bible.
Yeah.
And it was, do you remember which one it was?
No.
Because I think, I was just thinking about this, I think it could have been, what is it now? It's the kingdom of God is within. Right, that could have been it, because
John 17:21.
Right, so I was teaching the class,
Luke 17:20.
The whole reason I was quoting that essentially was because of the idea that we should be taking care of our temples, and
yes,
you know, I think this is like a central idea that is rarely really like integrated into any kind of religious practice.
And if I could expound on that a little bit, like, when you say temples there, what I'm hearing you say is our corporeal body.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, as a symbolic temple.
Right.
Yeah. And, so the other thing that I was spending a lot of time on, and I respect you as a fellow expert on, is AI.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because you use it every day, or many days.
Yeah, sometimes I cheat on tests.
And sometimes I find the work that would have taken me 10 hours in half an hour.
Yes, yeah.
With AI coming down the pipe and so fast and furious, basically, like, I think we've both seen things in the last year that,
at least in, I'll just speak for myself, like, they transcended my expectations and my timelines.
Yeah,
largely, like, things are coming fast. And what challenges does that give us as individuals and communities, and what opportunities does that provide?
To your point on the temple,
one of the conclusions that I've come to, I think that we'll talk about more, is that being as physical as possible, like, in our bodies, in our temples, is a very good solution to the next 20 years.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, actually, because I think right now money, from my understanding, essentially represents work.
It can.
It's energy. It's an energy exchange.
Yes, right?
I think at its purest form, it's an energy exchange. And you get the money by expending your own energy, right? So it's a transfer there, and then you use that money to pay for somebody else's energy. So, like, the time that it took to grow the food, or the all the human hours that went into
in a basic direct religion services.
Exactly. Just like a very simplistic way of looking at money. Potentially with AI, that's now being decoupled, right? You're going to have, like, maybe, like, getting that food means that,
yes,
you're, like, you pay the money, but there's actually no human man hours spent to create the food. So it sounds super science fiction, but that's the vision of a lot of the movers and shakers of our world right now.
So this is the concept is that
we're entering into an age of abundance, right, where the means of production are moved to machines at very low energy costs, so very low monetary costs, and that every single human on Earth has enough food, shelter, and, you know, basic sustenance.
Yeah.
That everybody has the basic things. So that's interesting. I do believe that that will happen. I also think that that's not the utopia that is being sold to us as. I think that puts a huge challenge on people. My perception of the world these days, when you say work, like a lot of people are attached to their work, and a lot of people are doing work that they don't necessarily love. Like I'm working to pay my rent, to put food on the table,
and to save up for my kids' education, you know, or to go on vacation.
Right.
But if you're in an age of abundance, you're effectively on permanent vacation. And that forces the question upon you of why are you on planet Earth? What are you here to do?
Right.
And I would like people to be prepared to answer that question, which a lot of people have not had that luxury.
Right. Right. I think a lot of people have a very like sophomoric view of what their ideal lifestyle would be, of like the Corona, you know, on the beach lifestyle, which is great for like,
I hope that's great.
But weekend, it's great.
Right.
But if you have like a high stress life or maybe a week, but then after that, you're like, there's no intrinsic meaning to that. I think you're going to drink way too much if you do that. So I think a lot of people, I'm going to drink too much. You know, I recently had been trying to have a conversation with my father about his retirement,
okay,
and to what degree that corresponds with other people, I don't know. But you know, he had no vision for his retirement. No roadmap at all. And you know, that's pretty terrifying. And maybe, you know, even in my life, it's been hard for me to plan out more than a couple months at a time sometimes, right? And I think one of the lessons that I had to learn is like, man, like you're going to get to that time anyway, but you need to set up so like you're at where you want to be when you reach that time. So,
and we all may reach that time pretty soon now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like there's, I'm very much into dualities and binaries. So I feel like there's two primary paths that people can choose to take.
Yeah, one is that Corona lifestyle plus meth and cocaine and porn and video games.
Oh, it's good too. That's
just drowned on the couch.
There's no way that's not going to be a lot of people, though.
Right. And this is the downside of AI, I feel, is that these algorithms, these content production algorithms, are going to make the best doom scrolls, the best TikToks, and the best video games that you've ever experienced in your life. Like, staring into these screens, we're just be like, that's amazing. And we can drown in like the best video game ever tailored for us, built on the fly. So that's one option. And because if I got food on the table and a roof over my head and I'm provided for,
maybe I just want to do that. But maybe also that's all that the system allows us to participate in.
Allows?
Yeah. Because there has to, okay, so back on the nature of money and work, part of the idea of like taking this vacation is like generally people are going, well, if you're traveling outside of the Western world, generally you're going to a country maybe of lesser means, right?
Well, yes,
it's a different currency exchange and all this. So your dollar is stretched further. But in the potential world of AI or complete egalitarian universal basic income.
We'll get back to that in a second. What exactly does that look like in the sense of like, well,
is there some like degree of like so what's the right way of some of the book? This is that maybe it's not truly egalitarian, where like we only have enough extra resources for the individual to just basically have the roof over their head, have their high-speed connection to the Apple Vision Pro, and so you're living in some kind of like
Phantasm contained reality.
Contained reality, completely separated from the body, essentially.
You're on the feet.
Yeah, you're in the matrix. You're in the matrix. Exactly right. You're in the matrix. Maybe that's the story here. It's, I mean, we should be...
It's a little dystopian.
It is a little dystopian.
Can we have dystopia and utopia at the same time?
Yes. Okay. I think in some ways we already do. Yeah. Heaven and hell are already represented here on Earth. And
look, can we touch on the UBI for a second?
To
bring people. Yeah. So UBI, universal basic income, is essentially this idea that once the means of production are mechanized and roboticized and globalized, and everybody get food, that every single citizen on planet Earth is getting essentially, like, let's just say $5,000 a month, right?
Right.
So of goods and services. So that just happens. It's like, it's basically universal welfare.
And the reason that this happens is because with this mechanization of labor,
unemployment is somewhat unavoidable.
Like, at least in my worldview, we're getting to 30% unemployment within 10 years, easy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a responsibility as a society to provide for those people, because as a society, we build this technology. So that's, the question is, once UBI is in place, what do the people on vacation actually do? Right? Yeah. I want to paint the utopian side of the picture.
Okay.
Which is that if people are prepared to look in the mirror and decide what they want their life to be worth and decide proactively and heroically what they want to accomplish, their mission, whatever you want to call that, then it's a great opportunity. You know, if the thing I always used to ask people that I mentored is, like, if you didn't have to make money, if you had $10 billion in your bank account, then what would you do every day?
Right.
And that's a hit. Hopefully the answer that someone comes to is that's what you should be doing anyways.
Right.
Whether you have zero or 10 million, because that's your highest purpose on earth.
Yeah.
And I think getting people into that mindset, which some people have not dared to imagine previously, you know, they might be like, that's my dream, but it'll never happen. But now it's like, that's your dream and it can happen today.
I think a lot of people don't know what that dream is, too.
For themselves.
This is a question that I've always had a hard time answering myself. I remember growing up, I never had an answer of, like, what I want to be when I grow up. And as a result, not having a specific vision or endpoint, I was wandering around fairly aimlessly. Fortunately, I was fortunate. I had a lot of different experiences and a lot of different adventures as a result of that, without maybe the typical planning route that a lot of people have to go through.
How did you make your day-to-day decisions of, like, I'm going to travel to Shanghai now?
That's a good question, because there was a couple events, I think, that kind of gave me, like, created a certain philosophy in my experience. One of them was I moved around a lot growing up. So the idea of home or some kind of stability wasn't really, like, ingrained in me. So it wasn't like leaving wherever I was wasn't really leaving home. And I was just going to be in another strange land. Didn't matter where I was going to be. And
your home was here?
That was part of the journey. I don't know. At that point, I didn't know. You know, there was no, like, solid concept of home. Another event was when I was 19, a friend of mine died in a car accident. And she was, of course, very young, and she represented a very, like, passionate, kind of curious energy. And I felt like it was almost a waste of, like, a perfect, beautiful life. And I'm like, I can't let my life be a waste. And I want to take on some of that energy and that kind of concept of live with passion. So that was, like, something that I wanted to have in my life.
And not something that you do.
I had from my perspective.
I think I still try to. And that was something early on that I wanted.
And then also,
there's a, just a concept of an interesting life.
And
I saw, you know, I think this is a very common experience for a lot of millennials too, is like you see your parents working so hard and really not receiving very much. And it made me just question, like, what's the meaning of life? What's the purpose of this? What, you know, I don't care about having expensive things. I remember when I was, I got my first job as an animator, and I was paid more than I needed at the time. I was very used to living with very, like, almost nothing, egalitarian. And I remember I had a coworker who was a little bit younger than me even. And he was buying a new car, buying huge TVs. And I'm like, I don't want any of that. And so it really, like, I was living and working in South Dakota at the time. And I was just like, I'm just looking out amongst the cornfields and feeling like there's nothing for me here. I don't understand why, like, I can't build. I don't have a vision to build anything here. And so that's how to put it in South Dakota. And so that made me look outward.
And I look outward and move outward. You did.
Yeah.
So what was your original question? It was a question. We're just like conversing. I guess the question for everyone is, and I think it would be healthy for people to start asking this, is to look in the mirror and say, why am I here?
To really, and to answer the question, if I had unlimited resources, what would I build in this world? What legacy would I start to construct?
Yeah.
You know, what in 100 years, or asking, you know, my 100 closest associates, what would they say my life represented? And what would I want them to say?
Yeah.
Right? So again, I don't think a lot of people have had the freedom to ask or answer that question. And I think that freedom is coming. The dangerous side of it is just to not answer the question and become a bum, basically, a welfare bum, right? The upside is that 1 billion people on planet Earth, all living on purpose, consciously, and executing their highest vision of themselves, that's utopia to me. Like, just people just firing on all cylinders and building wonderful things. And that's kind of like Burning Man on planet Earth.
Yeah. One of my questions in this experience is like, how should we live? And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to travel, is to see how the world lives and how we used to live even. And, you know, and that, you know, that leads me to the overall looking at our current society that we have constructed. And I feel like we're far too disconnected. We're far too, from our families, from our communities. I think most people don't really have much community outside. And this is an area,
a challenge, and this is an area where most of church, please do,
this is an area where like church, I think, and religion and spirituality really helps. You know, a lot of civic life and community flowed from the church.
The church not being the power structure, but the gathering of people with a belief.
Exactly.
To do good works.
It doesn't necessarily matter which church or which religious community, but that was kind of the purpose. And as you probably know, the irreligious are the fastest growing group of religions in America.
I was not aware.
Yeah. I think it just in my
life. That's not atheist. That's just not associating with any denomination or.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's, yeah. I think, I don't know if most people still, of course, believe in God to some degree in their own way and thinking, of course. And
I think that, thank God.
Maybe, I don't know.
I will just speak strongly on that if I might.
I'll say this real quick. I'm not sure to what degree the point of believing in God is without the maybe necessary community or practice behind that. Hmm.
complete or change almost or believe, like, I can speak from my own personal experience too, is like believing in God in the sense of like,
do you believe in God?
I think so. Yeah. And I think what's important, like what that means is like, it's like, if you believe in something, like, it's like asking, do you believe in gravity? Because if yes, then your behavior will change.
Then your behavior will change, right?
Black holes are the kind of,
yeah, but Seth, that's not something that like you interact with in your daily life.
No, it's not.
Right. And like, the question is like, well, what is God?
Maybe God is simply the highest good that we can conceptualize.
That's a great definition.
Yeah. And just by the sake of just surrender into something, like maybe it's worthwhile to try to head towards something higher than you, which is the highest good you can conceptualize.
Yes. I can say personally that I consider myself, until a few years ago, just a spiritual person.
What does that mean?
Admit that I felt there was something out there, something higher than humans. And at the same time, my ego was so large that I basically felt a one-to-one relationship with that. Like, the first couple of times I did mushrooms, what I thought my realization was is, I'm God. And that's kind of how I moved through the world. Like, I'm God's manifestation on earth, and this universe is my projection.
Do you still feel that way?
Absolutely not. It was a completely ego-driven worldview, and it did not serve me. It served me in some worldly ways.
Yeah,
it gave me enough arrogance and confidence to command things, and that worked, but it was empty. And when I did actually fully acknowledge and invite them to my heart, and essentially the word I'm going to use is surrender, because that's what it was. When I surrendered to a higher power, in my case, Jesus or Yeshua, and my whole world just went like, because up until that point, I prayed. I know it sounds weird, but I pray to God,
even though you
to myself,
even you, oh, really, is that how you do it?
All at once, yeah. All
it's external and internal God.
And if that was like a cognitive, specific, like you pray, you're like,
no,
like, kind of, it wasn't that.
Okay.
Well, it was to some external power. But I was like, to all external power in the universe, my only prayer was, show me the path to happiness.
Okay.
It was, which I didn't realize.
So I was like, horrible idea.
Well, there was years I did that, and I never got great answers. I got some answers. But once I surrendered to God, I realized that was the most selfish prayer in the world.
Can I ask you on that idea?
Let me just finish real quick.
Okay.
So what the thing that changed on that day, and it wasn't intentional, is my prayer changed from show me the path to personal happiness to show me how I can best serve God and my fellow humans.
Yeah.
It was like from master to servant. And then I was happy. I was immediately happy.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that was simple.
Can I ask you why is it wrong to look at demons as your highest order?
I'm not going to call it wrong.
I would call it empty. I mean, that sounds wrong to me.
What?
Pursuing something that's empty. That seems like the wrong thing.
Oh.
Why would you not call it wrong?
Because I think it's part of people's journey. Like, if you look at the Hindu model of, like,
you know, all the way from the four classes, basically from a worldly, I don't know what to call it, someone totally locks the earth and then someone totally in the spirit world.
Yeah. The path is basically, like, have all the sex you want, do all the drugs you want, get all the money you want, like, do all the worldly things until they no longer mean anything for you. You have to go through that. That's part of your journey as a spirit. And then you can say, oh, they're just toys. You know, okay. And if someone's in that zone, yeah, good. Like, that's part of it.
Some people don't need to experience that. They're already, they can skip that part.
Yeah.
And I think that's also the story of the Buddha, right? Is that he had all the worldly possessions, all the wives, all the things that he wanted, living in a palace, and he had to break free of that to have the realization.
Yeah. And then he indulged in it again.
He became a businessman and has had a prostitute for a wife, the most beautiful woman in town, and this, that, the other, and again he left the boat.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that second part.
Yeah.
That's important, because like a lot of times I'm like, oh man, I thought I learned that lesson. Well, the first one, since he was a prince, he was granted, right? Like, yeah. He was born into that luxury and didn't know anything else. And then he went aesthetic. And then the second one, he kind of built himself. Like, you know, he was an entrepreneur and things. So, like, that was more self-actualized.
Yeah.
But he came to the same conclusion again when he was
just be.
Right.
So on the question of like why not pursue happiness, and I think if you ask for hundreds in the Declaration of Independence,
that's actually a good point.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Pursuit of happiness. Okay.
Thomas Jefferson.
Okay, interesting. I didn't actually make that connection from like a national
Human on earth should read the Declaration of Independence. It is a miraculous, amazing document. I don't agree with the whole thing, but it's that the fact that humans wrote that.
Yeah,
it's like, wow.
I need to brush up on that then.
Mm-hmm. Totally pays me half.
I
think, you know, the problem that is, it's like, you know, the first slide is in big font.
Yeah. Then everything is like.
I think you might be talking about the Constitution. It says we the people.
Okay, you're right.
That's a much longer document. How does the Declaration? You know how the Declaration of Independence starts?
Oh, I thought we called these truths to be self-evident, isn't it?
I believe it is.
Okay,
I believe you just got it.
Yes, I love that part. We call these truths to be self-evident. It's obvious, motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Jefferson was a poet and a
rabid anarchist.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite founding fathers of all time. I think he's always the favorite, right?
I had a colleague who was really, really, really into Harrison, I think.
Okay.
Initial Secretary of the Treasury. And
yeah, him and Jefferson were like this.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He was a structure guy, and Jefferson was just like, tear it all down.
But you need both.
That's the duty, but you
have the duty. You need both. You can't only have one of that, though. And that was like
the creative tension.
If it wasn't for Harrison, maybe that would have just been like
the undoing.
I hope it's Harrison. I'm feeling that's not the right name, but it's something like that. It's the guy with the $20 bill.
And yes.
No.
Okay. Because he was the first one to start the first central bank.
Harrison was?
No. Andrew Jackson, I believe.
And maybe?
Yeah. So back on, like, while you're doing that, I want to talk a little bit more back on the concept of why it's generally inadvisable to, I think.
Hamilton.
Alexander Harrison.
Yeah, Jefferson than Hamilton. We were talking,
it doesn't matter. Hamilton's the right guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So Hamilton's the structuralist and the money guy.
Jefferson's the anarchist and the heart guy. And
yeah, that was a perfect chemistry.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So on the subject of pursuit of happiness, which sounds so like radically indulgent and,
It is,
but it's also sharply against the Judeo-Christian values.
This gruff-rooted way too strong was founded on, which is not entirely true.
That's really interesting, yeah. So anyway, so the pursuit of happiness, right? And so the question is, like, that I'm having is, like, well, I think, like, why... I don't think that happiness should be the highest order of pursuit. And the reason for that is life sometimes does not have happiness. It's I don't know if it's necessarily impossible, but when you're, you know, we're all going to face suffering, horrible suffering in life. And
as stated in the Dread Pirate Robert.
Exactly.
Life is suffering.
Like anyone who tells you different is trying to sell you something.
I remember one time my father came home from work and sat down at the dinner table, and it was time to pray, and he just sits there, like, I think, like, one of these ones, you know, just like, and he's just like,
life is hell. And that really, really stuck with me.
He said that?
Oh, yeah. And he meant it, and he still means it. You know, he really takes that in and personifies it.
This is the conversation I recently had with a friend. Maybe it was my father. I can't identify the right person. No, it's my brother. And yeah.
Carl, forgive me for disclosing this, but I'm just going to do it.
you know, we were talking about what is hell. He was asking me as a
Bible reading person, do
I believe in a literal heaven and hell?
Yeah. Do you?
I'm open to the idea, not attached to it.
Yeah.
Because I'm very attached to this life on earth. And my answer, what I ended up developing and saying on short order was, what I think hell is living on planet earth, this human life, without belief in God. And he broke down and was like, oh my, that's my hell. He goes, I am in that hell. No, it is hell. And I was like, and looking back on my life before God, like you, I felt totally aimless. Like I had notched a lot of accomplishments under my belt, but they didn't mean anything to me. And I was actually confused when I looked, like I tried to write an autobiography and I was like, there's no narrative thread here. This is a bunch of random experiences that don't even relate to each other. It is my life. Like I should be the one who can see where this is headed. And I couldn't. And I was like that very much frustrated me because I just felt like I was bumping around like a pinball.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that one of my prevailing questions to the gray ether is like, what the hell is this shit? What is it? This is so bizarre.
You're like, we're getting deep, man.
Right? We're like these meat puppets that were like launched out of like this exploding universe. And now it's like,
I thought you were just in gloves out of exploding vaginas.
Which also is part of like that equation, right? ideally not exploding.
And perfect.
Wait, I'm going to edit that for now. Yeah, and so that's definitely been the question, at least for the last decade, of like, what is this? Where do I fit into this? And what should be the highest order to pursue?
I found the answer. What's the answer? My answer was, again, in that same moment where I switched my prayer from happiness to service, it was, oh my God, all these life experiences, these random things like learning about AI and doing art and traveling to Asia and meeting these people and having these people as friends who will answer my calls, right? All around the world. Like, why all this? And I was like, oh, because this is like the team and the mission to go forward for the next 50 years to really serve humanity and serve God and like make the world a better place. Like, honestly, before when I was on the happiness thing, my highest goal was make $10 million, you know, give some to my kids, have a Lamborghini, have fun in the world. That was it.
Yeah.
Like that's what I wanted to do. And I was on that path.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. But, and it didn't satisfy me. I felt like once I had,
and I never got the Lamborghini, don't want it anymore.
But once I had that, why wouldn't I want a Ferrari too? And then why wouldn't I want a yacht? And why wouldn't I want, you know, all these toys?
Yeah, man.
And now, like, and so in that framework, all those people and thing were tools, right? Tools to achieve my selfish goal. Now, all those people are like a super team, and you're part of this, to just kick ass and serve the world and make the world a better place for everyone. Like, I'm excited about that. I'm amped about that.
Yeah.
And it all makes sense to me. Like, all these little skills and all these relationships and all these experiences, they all build up to this. If I didn't have those experiences and those connections, I wouldn't be able to do this, this, and this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, I know speaking of that in my own life is, you kind of have to go through the fire and flames just have some suffering, have some,
builds character.
It builds character, but also it kind of is like, it builds compassion and empathy. Yeah, there's experiences that I've had in my life, like, actually probably shouldn't talk about that right now.
But I've had some tough experiences that have made me realize like maybe how I'm also like presenting myself in the world and how other people are,
how I can show up in other people's lives to uplift.
And that's a really, like, if you put that on yourself to be like, I want to be a force for good at the world, that's a hard, heavy burden to bear almost. Because
are you bearing that burden?
Trying to.
I think you're doing a great job.
I'm trying to.
I really do.
To me, that's what it means to have faith in God. And that is to pick up that burden and willingly be like, you know what? I gotta suffer through something in life, right? I gotta bear something in life, you know? And what you don't want to be suffering for no reason.
Right.
Which that's, I think we all know people who are attached to that.
Yeah. And I'm worried that that's going to be me, or that is me, you know? But like,
really?
Part of that like worry is like, well, let's
constantly try and adjust our heading and our path and our trajectory on that. Because, you know, suffering aimlessly, I feel like that's kind of what my dad is doing. And, you know,
I only know a few people who I feel are suffering aimlessly. And I've tried to help them to the degree of my ability.
Yeah.
And found them pretty much, I might just try again with some more direct communication. But just trapped in victimhood, you know, capes.
Yeah.
And some people are very attached to that narrative.
Right.
And perhaps there's some magic words or gestures that can be done to pull them out. I haven't found it yet. On those things, I'm mostly like, okay, to work it out. Maybe it'll be 10 years. One of my firm beliefs, I think, is the that we all have the burden of transcending the sins of our parents or our family.
Is this generational trauma?
Yeah, that's another way to put it. It's generational trauma. Sins is about, like, you know, a vague term.
It's a loaded term.
I tend to use a lot of like maybe religious or loaded terms like this.
I think your usage of the word sin is accurate.
Yeah.
It's also, for some people, might not be the right word because it's so loaded.
Right. So my concept of sin is not the idea of like there's a God judging you based on these acts and perform, but it's really dependent to the individual, and it's the idea of essentially just falling short of your own ideals.
Amen.
Right?
I agree. So it's like
not doing your best.
Not just not doing your best, and
you know it. That's sad, man.
I agree.
Is it? That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think really like part of the whole point of life is for each of us to transcend that. Our traumas, upbringing, our parents, the burdens that our parents gave us. And for everybody, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's very minimal. And for some people, it's very heavy.
And I feel even for the people who it's minimal from our perspective, it's the right amount for them. Like, I used to think, like, you know, the royals were like, man, nothing to worry about. They're like, they're pretty inbred, dude. There's a lot of, like,
right,
trauma in that.
Well, and you watch their lives, you're like, you know what? They're going through the shit.
Yeah.
Like, they may have all the jets and all the things and that,
yeah,
but they're still getting ripped apart on the inside. Like every single person
has their journey. And like you said, there's joy and suffering in this beautiful journey.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, each of us wants to be rich. Each of us wants to be free of suffering and have comfort.
And I think I'm good on the rich part now. I mean, I'll accept it if it happens.
But a lot of it is like, we also like have an idealistic cartoonish version of what that life will be. And while, yes, there's definitely more comfort and stresses that are not afforded to them, there's no escaping the suffering of life.
So, yeah, let me touch on the rich people real quick.
Okay.
So just biographically, I've been a billionaire, which probably isn't that much anymore, but it was something in the 90s. And I've been completely homeless, like living in Golden Gate Park
with a tarp and a sleeping bag.
Those are, no joke, those are almost opposites of my happiness quotient. When I was homeless, I did what the hell I wanted to do. Like, I was having fun.
My question is, what did you want to do then?
I was just doing a lot of acrobatics and just, like,
meeting up with friends and, like,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Car wheels in the park.
Okay.
Yeah.
During the day.
Okay.
Just, like, going back into the forest at night and waking up at 6 a.m. Yeah.
I mean, I think that at its purest form, I think you've hit the nail on the head of what we need is like connection with nature, connection with our bodies, and a connection to community.
Yes. Yes.
I'm in support of that program.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and can I dovetail that into what, like, the broader topic here?
Yeah.
You said connection with nature, connection with our bodies,
right,
and connection with community.
Yeah.
These are the three foundations of the pyramid of the thing that are going to support us as technology comes and AI comes and goes. Like those three things are the health of our bodies,
yeah,
nature, which is like eternal essentially on Earth, right? Like being in the forest. I was like, AI is going to hit the cities first. It's going to hit like the Himalayas last.
Yeah.
And some, yeah. Yeah. And then community is the jam, right? Like, I mean, when like authentic community that you can actually lean on.
Yeah.
And like, and be vulnerable with, to use one of our earlier cumbias.
Yeah.
And just, and trust. And yeah.
Yeah. I have the imagery now of like, an AI refugee going into the Himalayas and, you know, going down into the valley and finding a family of yak herders or something. And he's like, don't you know that the world is like society has collapsed, the world is ending? And they're like very confused. They're like, we got it all here, man. We got the sky, we have our yaks, we have our community, our family. What are you talking about?
And we should have a little part of the OMB.
For sure. Original Muscle Beat. For the,
yeah, we don't know. Like the world's one of the world's best playgrounds.
You know, I think the AI and future of work has the potential to take away a lot of that. You know, our communities are moving online by and large for a lot of people.
But they don't have to.
They don't have to, but I'm just saying that's been the trend.
The healthiest people I know, like I pretty much stopped using Facebook completely. But the healthiest people I know are like, I only go on Insta or Facebook, maybe the youngsters, TikTok, to DM to coordinate a face-to-face meeting.
Of course, but a large cohort of people, like the metaverse is not being built for Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk will not be on the metaverse. That's for like, that's the opiate of the masses.
And neither will their kids.
And neither will their kids, for sure.
And so there's a
portion of society that's like this is they recognize it as junk food and they have the resources to stay away from it.
Mm.
But that's the metaverse, we'll just say, as a catch-all phrase for like a more interconnected digital world where we're use, I don't know what kind of devices we'll have or
well the yes.
But the point is like that's kind of robbing us of the physical culture,
mm-hmm.
robbing us of the connection to our bodies, connection to real community and to and also to nature, where you put on the headset and you're like, okay, I'm in a forest.
So I had a video game company in the 2000s, and the whole point was,
honestly, this was the structure and reason for the company was to teach people how to play physically
and to encourage
that. Yeah.
And so it was projector based with these, you know, big like movie projectors and fully interactive. We had like machine vision cameras.
Yeah.
So it was basically a virtual world projected onto the wall that was a community space. So we had like sometimes 16 people playing at once, sometimes 100 people playing at once on these huge projection walls. And it was like volleyball and soccer and rock climbing, like cool stuff. And my idea with the whole company was we're going to show people how to rock climb virtually. And of course, they're going to go straight to Yosemite and rock climb. Like, who won? We're just giving them a sampling.
And what do you think happened? What?
Almost to a T, everyone who we interviewed afterwards or focus groups were like, when can I get this in my living room?
Yeah.
I was like, no, never is the answer.
Well, if the question is not never, the question is actually right now, you can do all these things.
Right, with the goggles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, it's kind of like what you described as like supernatural, you know, the... You know, Rainier?
Yes, yeah, the boxing.
Yeah, so it's basically like a workout class that you do in virtual reality. And it's a real class, but you don't have to leave your living room. Yeah, well, I'm going to hold my tongue on that one.
Okay.
But I guess the biggest thing is that, so what you're saying is, real physical, like you don't need a gym, you can do body weight exercises, right? Like, we have our temples, they're capable, and we have planet Earth, and it's huge, and there's surfaces to play on everywhere.
There's a park everywhere for people to do cartwheels.
Everywhere, yeah. And yeah, and so that's like, it doesn't need to be like half an hour every other day at the gym. It can be wherever you are, just bust it out and use your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, and which is...
Yeah, exactly right.
Can I traverse a little bit? So you might not be able to tell by his tight t-shirt, but Abe is a specimen. And you are. You're a physical specimen. And I'm curious.
I believe the term is freak of nature.
Okay. I wouldn't go that
far. Yeah, no, it's very fit.
So the question is, at what point in your life did you prioritize fitness?
So I grew up as a gamer, for first and foremost.
A video gamer.
A video gamer. I was Counter-Strike, StarCraft. You know, that was also how I connected with friends. I was homeschooled for a short time. And, of course, you get into computer world when you're doing that. And then when I went to school, the first friends I made were people based on gaming. And that was kind of what our friendships were. And that's, I don't know, I think that's relatively rare then compared to now. But looking back on that experience in my teens and early 20s, there was no connection to my body at all.
Right.
Body was completely useless. I could have lived my life the same way without a body. It would have actually made my life easier if I didn't have a body.
I was also attached to my computer as a youth, and my fantasy was to get the IV drip that I didn't have to, and a catheter, so I didn't have to go to the bathroom, and I didn't have to get to have meals.
Yeah.
So I get it.
And so I'm glad you asked this question, because I actually did have like an epiphany, a coming to God kind of moment when I was in northwestern China and in a province called Xinjiang, doing a multi-day course adventure, horseback journey.
Okay, that's right? Awesome.
Sounds about hanging in tents and yurts and you know, you travel for a day and not see anybody, and then you just come across a couple of yurts with some sheep, you know, and that's their life, and they live in that world.
When?
But I remember just having just like, almost, it was almost like a state of euphoria, just seeing the absolute beauty around me. And I thought like, man, I should preface this as well by saying I had a very good friend who was essentially like completely sucked into the world of Warcraft. A lot of you guys will know this.
My kids were.
Yeah, a lot of you guys will know this, but like he, you know, he was my roommate for a while, childhood friend, and he really literally locked himself in the room for like a year just playing. He stopped going to class, dropped out of college.
Wow. And he was deep.
Yeah, he was deep into it. And I had a couple other friends who really also just didn't pursue anything else in life other than just gaming in their free time. And so the rest of their life like suffered as a result of that. But when I was in that moment in Xinjiang, I was just overwhelmed with like the idea of like, you know what? This is my character. This is my quest.
Yes.
This is how I'm leveling up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is way more interesting because like
it's real.
All the inputs are here. I was like, I wanted to like, you know, how great would it be? I was thinking before, maybe how great would it be to like experience the computer more, experience whatever kind of like, instead of just a visual feedback of what you're doing on the screen, have some kind of neural link where you plugged in and you're having that. And you're like, wait a second, that's what this is, right?
In 32K, 3D,
yeah,
360.
Yeah, so that was like,
yeah, tactile happy.
That's what this is.
So let's try and play the game for all it's worth.
So that was an epiphany that I had. And as a result of that, as a result of that, Yeah, well, really, really quick. Yeah, I share that epiphany. When I had that video game company, everyone started asking me, what video games do you play? And I was like, I design video games for 10 hours a day. I don't play any video games anymore. I'm done with playing video games.
Yeah.
And the switch that went off in my head was exactly the switch that went off in your head. I was like, this is my video game. I play every day.
Yeah.
I see a stranger that I'm interested in. I just walk right up to him like an NPC. I'm like, what's that? You know, like, no fear.
Yeah.
You hit the reset button. If you die, it's all good. Right. Haven't had to hit that reset button, thank God.
You know, I haven't heard too many people talk about, like, the life experience in the context of, like, this is actually your video game. This is your game.
Yes. Right. High stakes.
Super real. And super, very realistic.
Right. But most real.
Very realistic.
Yeah. I think it's a healthy model.
It's a healthy model. I think where a lot of us want the escape, though, is, again, like, obviously from negative emotion, but also, like, the monotony of everyday life. A lot of us, myself included, it's like, it's very easy just to get to a rhythm of every day is like blending into each other. And you just, you know, that's when putting on the VR goggles or having like the hyper real experience, right?
You experience monotony in your present day life? I'm asking this because I see Abe as a very, like, he's always doing something. He's blading.
I need a lot of stimulation.
Okay, clearly.
I need a lot of stimulation.
Yeah. And you get a lot of stimulation.
Right. I need a lot of novelty and love and spirit.
Your baseline is higher than most.
Yeah, I think that's also a driving factor for me. I need a lot of novelty. Excellent. So that's one of the things that fueled my travels as well.
Okay.
There's just a lot of the new experience. I recently went to Tijuana for the first time, just on a day trip with a friend. And we're just walking down the street and saw some dude with, like, he looked homeless, but he had like red face paint on, and he had like a McDonald's cup or something like this with flames shooting out.
Real fire.
Just casually walking down the road, and like, I was like,
yes, what is that?
Yeah, that is like,
I don't know, I might never know.
I like, and that's one of the things I love is like, you just see something that just completely like blows your mind of like, well, what is it? What on earth is that?
This is why travel is good. It's, yeah. So back to your, because I riffed off of it, but you're on the steps, on the horse, you're thinking, this is my character, I'm in the video game.
Yeah.
And from, is that when you started, like, were you physically fit at the time?
No. I had just started kind of on that journey, and that wasn't necessarily months prior is like where I had started. And that, I mean, this is story time, I guess, but basically, long story short, make all goes for another time, is I got kicked out of China, and I was
bookmarked.
Yeah,
talking about that at some point later.
And what? I was back into South Dakota being like, you know, I was just unplugged from, I don't know, the Matrix, or like I just came down from my high of being, you know, on another planet, essentially, for it. And I was like, well, this is no place for me. I was Luke Skywalker on Tatooine, you know, and I'm just like, this is not for me. South Dakota's not for me. And one night I stumbled upon a website or a blog. It's a blog called Cycling Home from Siberia. And this guy is a British guy who had started a bike trip in Siberia in the wintertime, and over the course of like 3 or 4 years, cycled all the way down to Asia, across Australia, back up, across India, across Western Asia.
Literally mentioned Middle East,
you know, all the way back to the UK. And I'm like, wow, that just was exciting. You know, looking at his updates and something about that really spoke to my, this adventurous feeling. And I remember,
and you immediately felt, I can do that?
Well, I didn't immediately feel like I can do that. But what I felt was like, if he can do that, there's no reason by that being like starting cycling in the wintertime by itself. Was like, I can start in the summertime in the United States and just bike wherever I want. And that started, I bought a $300 bike on Craigslist, and
took off
for it. And this is also before iPhone.
See, I'm going to say that you're more cognitively liberated than most. I also feel cognitively liberated, and I used to see stories like that all the time.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, that's amazing. That's awesome. I could never do that. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. And it was not only recently where I've been like, all of us can do anything.
Yeah.
Like, because I've just been meeting people more and more who are, you know, living those adventures, and that's their lives. That's not a vacation. That's like their path, and they're living it. And I'm like, anybody can do that. I mean, there is a little, like, to the suffering point, like, you know, you survive on less, right?
Right.
But it's, you can, anyone can do it. It's making choices, and that's exciting.
Yeah, this is one thing that like shakes my soul when I hear people say, I could never. And to that I say, dude, there's nothing so special about you that you can't
start the process.
Begin today.
Yeah, there's nothing so special about you. Like, so one of the things that Gregory and I both do is something called the traveling rings at Original Muscle Beach. And it's just
where I met.
Yeah, it's where we met. It's a line of it's a row of, I think, 8 or 10.
Well, I'll edit in a picture of rings that you swing from essentially, and
it looks very formidable, and rightly so, it is.
But so many times am I there, and I see somebody walk up to it, I was like, oh, I could never do it.
And it's like, all it takes is just to touch the ring first. That's step one. There's a progression to everything. One of my teachers famously said, there are no wrong
positions, only wrong progressions. And so, you know, think about this in the context of, let's say, like,
it took me 3 months to get from the start to the end of the rings.
3 months.
Right. The first time I did, like, 2 rings.
But that's the journey of it. That's, like, the beauty of it. It's like, what's the point if you can do everything all the time to the maximum degree?
When I got to the last ring, I just celebrated. I was like, I'm king of the world. Then somebody told me, you can go back. And I was like, what? Some people go all the way to 10 rings and 10 rings back, and some people do 30.
And that's the wild thing. You see, like, these wild acrobats just doing amazing things on this. And then you realize, I remember, like, I felt the same way the first time I went through one. There's like, oh, yeah, I'm so, like, fuck me.
And we just muscled it, right?
Like, yeah. And then you're like, you know, it's not full of finesse. No way.
You know, just made it by the skin of the teeth.
You know, and at the end of the day, then you go back, you know, a couple of years later, you look at the video that you saw, and you're like,
you know, you got to check your ego there, man. That,
you know, there's always someone better than you. Always someone like, what? But that doesn't matter.
Right. It's absolutely not a competition.
Because it's all like, the thing is, you're competing with your past self, not someone else. This is super important to realize, is like, compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not who somebody else is today. This is like
I'd really try to set it up even more.
Yeah,
the rings is a very special place for me.
I'm not saying just on the rings.
Everything in life. Let's just say everything in life. Like, I'm kind of done with the competition. Like, I'm a competitive person and
competitive too.
Well, there's two. Let me
side with my spiritual self,
which is on the rings. It's just whatever that ring run is, even if one of them smacks you in the head, like, that's the perfect run for that moment. Like, you're in the zone on the rings. It's very zen. It's very like, there is no future. There is no path. I am just flying across time and space and engaging my monkey animal self and having a blast. And I don't care what it was last week or next week. I'm just like flying in this moment. And that's one of the reasons I love the rings. It's that zen of immediacy.
Yeah.
So the question, though, is still like, what can you compare yourself to in life, not just in the rings? I mean, I think I can do what everyone does, which is like, I read an article in New York Times and it says the age of someone, and I immediately like, is that person older or younger than me?
And if Mark Zuckerberg is only 42 and I'm 54, fuck. Like, you know what? What was stopping me from, you know, doing that?
So yeah, that's a very reasonable. I think everyone has that sense.
Yeah, but at this point, I try and not care about that so much because, to your point, I'm just trying to be the best Gregory I can be every day and not worry about, I mean, I'll support what Aiden's doing, but I'm not comparing myself to Aiden.
Right.
I'm just like, I'm given this set of opportunities that's unique. It's different than everyone else's. What am I going to do with these cards I'm given?
I kind of see it as almost like other people, it's almost like a roadmap. Like, for example, the cyclist like inspired me. Is like, oh, that's something you can do. I didn't do it exactly like him. And if you compare our journeys on paper, like mine was a joke compared to what he did, right?
But okay, to be clear, Abe bicycled halfway across this entire country, the United States of America, which may be, that's not a joke to anybody. That was a serious bike ride.
Oh, well, it was a serious bike ride. But it was not a four-year process, I'm saying.
The point is like, if you compare those two experiences on paper, like, there's obviously, like, that guy wins.
But the value that I got from it was enough.
Perfect for you. It was perfect for me. And perfect for the people you tell the story to who may not have ever bicycled more than 5 miles in their life.
Right. And I'll add to that point, I had never done any kind of physical practice. I never... With the exception of just biking around the city a little bit to get around. And so I wasn't like a really avid, I was never one of those like spandex wearing, like, you know, racer biker dudes. In fact, before this, I had my dad's old college bike. That was the bike I had. It was super heavy. It was a Panasonic bike that was actually too big for me and actually likely too big for him. And, you know, that $300 Craigslist bike was amazing compared to that. But the point is after that experience, that was the first time I ever experienced any kind of like feeling good from exercise. Usually if I had some kind of like, I remember going rock climbing one time with a friend in college and it was indoor rock climbing. I went up like twice and I was obliterated. I was exhausted. I was traumatized. My nervous system felt overloaded. I remember coming home and just like being so hungry, feeling like I had just like run a marathon. That experience for me was 100% real. You know, it's almost like you could look at that as like, that wasn't real exercise, dude. You just did.
It was because that's where you ended.
And that's where I was at that level. I was like 21, 20, around that age. And when I did this bike ride at 24, I experienced for the first time kind of getting in shape, because if you're biking for 8 hours a day, after about 2 weeks, you're going to start to get in shape.
2 weeks is, and any of those things, 2 weeks is that is when you turn the curve.
Yeah, that's what it seems to be. And after those 2 weeks, I remember feeling like, yeah, I'm starting to feel like an athlete. I feel like all of a sudden, I remember feeling that runner's high, and I'm like, wow, this feels like a drug. This is crazy. I want to explore this more. And so after the bike ride, I was like, I ended up moving to Hong Kong and I ended up moving next to a capoeira instructor just by chance. And I met her on the ferry and she invited me to class. I was like, well, I don't know anybody. I don't have anything to do here. So, okay, I'll go. And for those of you who don't know what capoeira is, it's an Afro-Brazilian martial art that incorporates
dance.
Many different disciplines, music, dance, there's mythology in it, some degree of spirituality. There's a mix of even like, if you want to get deeper into it, there's a mix of the traditional African religion, the Amazonian indigenous religion, also
Catholic, but very physical,
graceful, strength-based, all that agility.
Right.
Yeah. But the main element of it is, of course, the movement. And what I got, one of the things I also got from it was a community. And like Brazilians are mercilessly personable and warm, and they know how to connect in a way that I've never seen anyone else. I was living in Asia for many years. The social elements couldn't be more different. They couldn't be more different. And I was essentially alone in Asia at the time, and all of a sudden I found like a community and a family and a connection.
In Brazil?
In Hong Kong. Brazilians
in the capoeira.
And I remember doing that for his class, and I'm just like, something resonated with me, something connected with me in a very deep way. And that is really what started my quest for
or my journey with a physical culture.
Awesome. Awesome.
No.
See. What was your first unplugging moment from the Matrix?
Probably when my brother,
who's definitely an athlete, I was not that thing at the time. I was an overweight, like, computer person, entrepreneur.
You were overweight?
Yeah, I mean, 20 pounds overweight. I wasn't, like, huge, but...
Yeah.
I was
chubby.
Yeah.
I was in cross country in high school, and a wrestling.
And I was very fit then. But in my mind, I was still that person, but physically I was not. And so my brother continued to do running and ran marathons. And he was just like, one year he's like, and we're doing the Marine Corps Marathon. And I was like, I'll do it. And he was like, man, you can't do it. I don't bet you 100. You cannot do a marathon. I was like, I'll run it today. And he was like, go. He goes, you run today. Like, $500 on the line. I was like, bet. So just cold turkey. I hadn't exercised in like 12 years, maybe 15 years. Yeah.
I just put on a pair of running shoes, went out the door, started running.
And
at about mile 12, I think,
yeah,
my legs cramped, both of them. Like, worst cramps I've ever had in my life, like basically paralyzed. I face planted, and I crawled the rest of the way home.
Because I said, you crawl 12 miles home?
No, I had like done this
circuit where I was like looping like a 4-mile loop or something.
But I crawled like, I think like 2 miles home.
With your legs completely cramped.
Yeah.
They didn't like uncramp or anything.
They might have at some point, but I just remember like it took me a long time to get home like that 2 miles. Yeah. I called my brother. I was like, hey, dude, like, you win, you know. He's like, what happened? I'm like, I ran 12 miles. He goes, you ran 12 miles? Like cold? I was like, yeah. He's like, that's amazing. He goes, I'll tell you what, like the marathon's in 3 months. I'll pay for your registration, but you got to train.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. Okay.
That's, I know what that means.
Yeah, I kind of half-assed trained.
Yeah, it was like, Gregory Routh doesn't need to train.
Right. Because I already thought I could do it.
Yeah.
I did do the marathon.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. I about died. I threw up
voraciously, or whatever you call it. Like, I mean, I don't...
Voraciously is the correct word. Okay. I voraciously threw up at the end. Like, I don't know where all that even came from, but, like, I mean, it was horrendous. But I completed it. And I was like, well, I did give it my all, that's for sure. But perhaps if I had trained, I could have actually, you know,
like finished and not thrown up, or like, you know, finished stronger, definitely faster.
And then very soon after, I had a good friend from like of 10 years who was just like a computer guy with me. And Facebook had just started. And I saw on Facebook, he's like, I'm about, and next weekend I'm doing my Ironman triathlon. And I was like, what the fuck? Like iron? Like, isn't that, like, in my brain, only Lance Armstrong would do an Ironman triathlon, like this, you know, Olympic, yeah, level athlete thing. And this guy to me is just a guy. And so I like emailed him and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, doing? Like, he's like, man, I've been training for 6 months. He goes, I train between 3 and 6 hours a day. I eat 5,000 calories a day and I'm ready. And I was just like, that is what clicked for me. Like your bicycle ride thing. I was like, if he can do it, I can do it. He's just a guy. He's not Lance Armstrong. Yeah. He's not an Olympic athlete. Yeah. He's a guy who I worked with for 2 years who like wears a suit, and he's gonna go 140 miles, you know, in 10 hours on a bicycle and in the ocean and on his 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then I was like,
I have to do that. Like, I started training for triathlons. Yeah. And that was really my start. And like your bicycle thing, like when you're training, you're getting ripped. Like, it's
about getting in the zone.
Yeah. Because you have a goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of my bike trip, I was still very skinny up here, but like I had like these beautiful, immaculate quads.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. I was like, wow, where did that come from? That was really kind of cool.
Yep. Yeah. How did we transition from when you were a gamer, I was a coder, how did we transition into physical health, physical culture?
Yeah.
Physical culture?
Yeah.
Yeah, be good.
Yeah, that's even better. Because physical health is an individual thing. To back to what you started saying, is like we're honoring our own temple. And physical culture involves community.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, I want to add one thing to this. This is a much later in life, but like, sometimes it's not fun to work out, right?
Right. Yeah, true.
Yeah. That's why we have rings and stuff. This is like playing with toys that actually gives us exercise. Yeah, rock climbing. But during workouts, after I found God, I got this strong impression that it was like, God gave me this body. It would be disrespectful to not have it in tip-top condition. Like, if I have my car gets oil changes, I wash it,
yeah.
I vacuum it, like, it's in tip-top condition. It's ready to perform. Why would my body be a messy house? Why would my body have, like, a broken fender that I never bothered to fix? Like, I want this to be the best possible. If God gave me this thing and is capable of this, I want to max it out. Like, I want it to be the best possible temple it can be.
Yeah, I had a kind of similar experience, I think. Without coming to that quiet conclusion at that time, I think it was 24 at the time or 23, and my girlfriend had said to me, kind of just off the cuff, not really said to me, but just kind of talking about how, like, she was like, if I was a guy, I would for sure go to the gym and have a good, like, a great body. And I'm like sitting there like, what does she know that I don't? And you know, like, what is she trying to say to me? I know what I've done. And I'm like, I'm good enough as it is. I don't need that to be loved.
Which is also,
that's also true.
Is also true.
Yeah.
But also there is a, you know, I don't know how subconscious it was at first, just saying is like, you should probably, like, you could be a bit more, you know,
which is
true for all of us, you know, which is like kind of part of the burden of life and the burden of, or maybe a better way to say it is like the curse is that everyone can be better than who they are, which is always a tough check to cash. But I think that is one.
This is a good thing.
It's a good thing. It's a guiding philosophy of like, let's aim up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I got a 97. Next time we can do a 98.5.
I would say 97 is good enough.
Oh, good enough, yeah. But I don't know, last, you know, years.
Right. Yeah, so we've been chatting for probably 2+ hours, I think, now.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think 90 minutes.
But within 90 minutes, okay. Is there anything else we wanted to close with?
I hope that this, at least my intent in this, is to inspire you to be your highest self and to really ask the question of why you're here on earth, and to start today to manifest and embody that. And second of all, be with real humans in real spaces. Like,
totally.
Abe and I are not on a Zoom conference doing this podcast. We're here in the room, and I enjoy being in his physical presence. And I'd advocate that for everyone to just like be around humans.
Yeah, likewise, my friend. The thing that comes to mind for me to say too is right now is like back to the topic of happiness, and I think the reason why we shouldn't put that as the highest order of pursuit is simply because life isn't always going to be happy, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to be meaningful, and pursuing what is meaningful, I think is the, and that's for everybody that answer is what meaning is I think a little bit different.
Very much so.
Yeah. But, you know, just realizing that you're not always going to feel happy. We're going to have suffering, we're going to have loss, and that's part of life. And, I think the acceptance of embracing that, it's a hard pill to swallow, but, I think happiness is the byproduct of a meaningful pursuit.
And as Conan the Barbarian once said,
what does not kill us makes us stronger. Amen.
With that,
let's close up. All right, guys, thanks for listening to Physical Culture with Abram Hodgins and Gregory Roberts. We'll see you next time.